Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 104 of the Michael and Patty Show. I'm Michael.
And I'm Patty.
And it's 9 degrees, sunny, beautiful, with a low tide today. Looks like it's about down about 10 or 14, 10, 12 feet here at the Yacht Club.
Yeah, it's Thanksgiving Day here in Canada. And we do have absolutely beautiful sunny skies. The water has just little ripples. The sun's dancing off the top of it, and it's absolutely beautiful day.
If you're not familiar with this podcast, Patty and I try to present Prince Edward Island real estate, and generally real estate, as it's basically the same thing right across North America, USA, and Canada, in a very transparent way. We've just started a Facebook group a couple months ago, approximately, and we're up to almost, surprisingly, 900 members, 896 as of this morning, according to you.
Yeah. And the benefit of that is it is a growing community to help support. So as much as there's going to be lots of great content until we get caught up with all our episodes, Michael, there's going to be Monday, Wednesday, and Friday a release, a snapshot release of what the upcoming or that podcast is going to be about. So you can make the decision as to whether or not you want to click in and listen to it, even though they all have great content. We have Toolbox Tuesdays, Thoughtful Thursdays, so there's lots happening on the Facebook group.
And we're going to give Tricia Campbell, which is a real estate agent in PEI, awesome woman, very experienced, a special shout out because she's also the business owner of the Sweet Company. And if you don't know anything about fudge, Patty's going to fill you in.
Yeah, the Sweet Company is located in Wood Islands. So those who are traveling to PEI and maybe planning your house hunting trip, if you take the ferry over from Nova Scotia, it is at there's a tourism building there. And currently that's where they are located and situated. They have lots of bulk candy. They make island-made homemade fudge and with lots of great flavors and that. And it's just a really fun experience for the whole family.
And that brings up a good point. If you are visiting the island and you're taking the ferry, which you should do at least one way because it's great fun, it's a nice trip, drop by the tourist information office there as well. Pick up a paper PEI map because it shows you the tourist routes, among other things. It's probably the best map available over and above what you're going to find in a grocery store, an office supply, or bookstore. The other thing is there is a liquor store there as well, so you can fill up on beer, liquor, maps, fudge, and candy all at once. Moving along.
Well, I was just going to say, because a lot of gas stations across Canada, I know, if you go into a gas station and have to, find or purchase a map, that's exactly what you're doing is purchasing it. But if you go into the Tourism PEI Center, they are so helpful, and you'll be able to pick one of those up complimentary of your visit on the island.
September 2025 stats are out, and we're just going to go through them. As usual, we've indicated in the past, the numbers are thin, so it may seem like a big percentile, but it's really not in form of units. So home sales are down 2.6%. They numbered 190 units, down from 195 in September 2024. Our market continues to be balanced, neither favoring the buyers or the sellers. As you know, we're starting to see a lot of new price reduced signs, and oodles of open houses, which we all know from the podcast is a pacifier for the vendors. Probably not going to get your house sold, but it might make you feel better.
Yeah, and it's a great opportunity for real estate professionals to be able to get themselves out there and possibly pick up some of your neighbors in your neighborhood as potential future business and listings. So,
especially if you have Trisha's fudge at the open house.
That's a good point.
New listings are up 7.6%, 324 listings from 301 last year. Benchmark price, which is supposed to be the atypical house in the market, is $375,500 in September 2025. But this is interesting. Unchanged compared to the same month last year. That's highly unbelievable that it'd be right exactly the same down to the nickel. But according to this, $375,500 buys you the average house in PEI. Thoughts before we move on?
No, I do find that really interesting because our market has definitely been in the month of September plateaued, leveled off.
What do we have here next? Oh, Patty, question from the Facebook group. And if you do have any questions about PEI, real estate, or Prince Edward Island in general, join the Facebook group and put them in there and we'll get back to you. So the question was, I'm looking for a job.
Yeah, and this ended up turning into quite the conversation and dialogue that we didn't do in the Facebook group itself because he was looking at a very specific line of work. So he ended up just direct messaging me, and him and I were able to kind of do a deeper dive into what he was looking for, which he was, his particular position was the fishing industry. So I was able to send him some really cool links that allowed him to be able to connect with potential fishermen for the next season to get his foot in the door, if you will, so that he can possibly secure employment for 2026.
You mean foot on the boat?
Foot on the boat. Sure, we will say that.
So what's your advice for people looking for a job in PEI with respect to the Facebook group?
Yeah, there are some really good sites. Island residents, island business owners do use Indeed. There is a PEI job search that is on the government site, which is a great source as well. We can post a few, Michael. I'll send them to you so that you can even put them in the description.
Why don't you put them on the pot or the Facebook group?
Yeah, I will do that. Probably on a Toolbox Tuesday, where to look for a job is, I'm going to put that on the list.
We'll hold you to that.
Okay.
And another point here, if you are looking for a job or you're looking to create a business, we'll address one of those at a time, post your resume or at least post what you're looking for because there's always companies looking for people on the island. And if you're an entrepreneur thinking about starting up a business, it might be a good place to have a poll and see what the general response is. Not that that would hinder you from starting regardless.
But in any industry, any business, sometimes it's not always what you know, but who you know that allows the conversation to at least get started so that the business owner may not have been able to have crossed paths with this individual or overlooked them only to have a little bit more of a focus on them and realize the high value.
Patty, you had a customer or a client, a home seller that listed their house with another agent and they instructed these home sellers to get out. Consider your home is sold. I have to admire their enthusiasm, as illegitimate as it is.
Oh, not good advice. So if you're a seller and you are looking to sell and you're interviewing real estate agents and your realtor makes the recommendation, now unless your furniture and your home is, if you're a hoarder, I don't know, I still would never do this. This particular situation, what was advised, and I guess their furniture and everything complemented the color palette that they used within the home. They didn't feel they had a lot of furniture. I don't know because I've never seen it before. But they were advised to move all their furniture, move out of the house so that it could be staged because it was promised that it would generate a quicker sale. And that did not happen, Michael. And it was really unfortunate because they're deflated. They've missed out on the prime selling season. And now, you know, they've got to come up with a plan and a possible plan for 2026.
And not getting into the solution to sell this house, but it had absolutely nothing to do with moving the owners out of the house and causing it to be vacant.
Yeah, it's just not something I would have ever thought a realtor would advise.
Well, it's convenient.
Well, for
I'd much rather have them out of the house because we could show it at any time. We can have other agents do like 100 open houses on it. We could have lunch there with other agents at open houses, training session. Sure.
Yes.
It's not practical for the home seller.
No, and it's not fair because, again, what does that mean for the seller now? Yes, they've moved out. Yes, they've been given these promises, and you should always under-promise and over-deliver. But now they're carrying two properties, regardless of the situation, whether they have oodles of money coming out of their pockets or they don't. They've got property taxes times two, electricity times two. You know, whether they're paying rent and waiting because they have what's called frozen equity. Their home is in their house and they need to sell it in order to make that purchase going forward. Lots of stress and undue stress.
I booked a showing on one of my listings, and this particular listing has a certain element to it, we'll call it. And we've had 36 showings on it.
Ooh, that's a lot.
Is that bad?
It just means probably the price needs to be tweaked, or it's such a niche product that the buyer hasn't presented themselves. But I'd say it just probably needs to be a little bit price adjusted.
Listings fit typically in three categories. They fit in that I'm crazy and I'm so overpriced, no one wants to talk to me or inquire on me, right?
Yeah, okay.
Number two is I'm probably a professional real estate flipper or speculator, or I'm not really super motivated, so I'm going to put this 10 to 20% above market and wait till someone comes along that's willing to write a check at my price, which may be a tad high. And then we're going to list at market value and get this sold in the amount of days that the market dictates based on absorption rates that can all be calculated by your agent or broker. So this house sits in we're probably a little overpriced. Is it a magnificent home? Absolutely, Patty. Is it a phenomenal lot and the best views, the best builder, the best roof, and the best light switches you can buy? For sure it is. But we're going to max out the value in this house. We're patient to do that. The homeowners are patient to do that. So that's what our business plan is here. So is 36 showings bad? Not necessarily. They're indicative of where we're priced. And we're assuming the marketing material is in place, but it's basically the price. We're helping other neighbors sell their houses. But someone is going to come along and buy this that has to buy a house that weekend, probably from a relocation, and we're going to cash in.
Yeah, and one of the things, Michael, and I don't know if you received this, but a buyer will use the days on market to try justifying their lowball offer. Whereas like what you're laying out here, you're confident in the price. You know, it might be a location, it might be a bit of a unique layout or something, but it doesn't necessarily give grounds to come in and, you know, try to lowball or...
We're not getting lowball offers.
No? Okay.
No, we'll get her sold and we'll max the price out and it's going to take some time. So is it a bad thing? No. Is it going to take some time? Probably.
Good.
Why am I answering my own questions?
I don't know. You did a great job.
I thought so. Tell us about annual property taxes will now appear in realtor.ca under the property summary. I don't know anything about this, but it certainly sounds like it's going to confuse the consumer.
No, actually, I've had a few clients that have called, which is I'm going to end up discussing right now. They love the fact that the property taxes are now on realtor.ca, but what they presented was a really important question. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to give them a black and white answer. So this inquiry that reached out to me asked, is the property tax amount posted on realtor.ca? Because on Prince Edward Island, we receive a provincial credit or discount for our provincial portion of our property taxes when you reside here all year long. So if somebody's planting a seed in your head and saying you pay double property taxes if you're not an island resident, that's not how it works. That's not the formula in the equation. But what they asked is, were the property tax amounts posted island resident tax or non-island resident tax amount? And unfortunately, we don't have any black and white rule that says we must all post island resident tax amount or all post non-island resident tax amount. So therefore, it is up to the buyer and the buyer with the buyer's agent's assistance to be able to do your due diligence. And you've got to find out a little bit of information about the seller. Now, we don't disclose a lot of information unless the seller gives us permission to do so. But in this case, this is an important question. So you want to know, and you can ask your agent, are these island resident tax amounts or are they non-resident? And that's really easily done by pulling the tax report. And at the bottom of the tax report, it will say provincial credit amount. And as long as it's not between January and April, it will have an amount there. And if it's a zero, it's because it they're getting taxed at a non-island resident tax amount. But if there is a number there that they're getting a credit for or a discount amount for, then that will be how you'd be able to indicate. But it was a really good question, and it's not, there's no black and white, so you're going to have to do your due diligence and find out.
So you're going to request the tax report, which comes off the GeoLink system that your agent can provide to you, or you can subscribe to yourself. The other statement I will make is if you buy a house and you're being taxed at an assessment value, saying the house is worth $200,000 and you buy it for $650,000, your taxes are going to probably change. So the tax amount on realtor.ca is kind of irrelevant and misleading.
Well, for sure, absolutely, because our properties only reassess, or the province only reassesses property taxes when it conveys or at conveyance. So there will be an adjustment, and there is, pay attention to the agreement of purchase and sale. This isn't a software app where you scroll all the way to the bottom and say, I agree. You need to know what clauses are in there. There is a clause that says that the property tax amount that is currently in place, the province reserves the right to do an adjustment, just to give you a heads up. So, because we've ran into situations, especially after COVID, when we had such a mass migration of people moving from across Canada to PEI, and they were upset when they received their first tax report.
And property taxes are a political thing too, and politicians like to use them to get votes. And it's so bad that at one point in PEI and other provinces where they would freeze property taxes in order to get votes. And it's the same thing. You're not going to see the tax department say, hey, values have gone up by 130%. So congratulations, your taxes have doubled, because whatever party was in was probably going to get voted out, without getting into a big political debate. But there's a lot of politics tied to property taxes as well, and they are not, in a lot of cases, indicative of true market value. Would you agree?
Correct.
Next topic. You're selling your house. You're super excited. The agents have kicked you out of it because it's going to be sold right away, as per our previous subject. So you've gone out, you've put a big deposit down with your life savings, and you can't wait to move into your new house in another province. Is this a good thing to do? No.
Probably not. And another, flipping that on the other side, you are all excited, you're moving from another province, you tie up another seller's home. Because this was your
full... Well, they're not tying it up. They've made their offer unconditional. They have put their deposit down. There's no conditions.
Oh, I didn't know there was no condition. So if there's no conditions, well, let's hope they have... If they have the funds in their... They have no funds, they're totally relying. They got frozen equity in
their
house.
They're relying on this house to sell, and the agent said it would sell right away. So don't do this. Unless you have contracts in place with sizable, non-refundable deposits, I would not be buying another house contingent on my house selling. I would possibly do it with a certain high understanding if there is a large risk that one house or another isn't going to close, and keep this in mind. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And we just spoke, Michael. We had a meeting with a mortgage broker a couple days ago, and he advises always, always, always put in a finance condition. And
unless you can pay cash.
Yeah. Unless you have cash and you can write the check, but always recommends that a person puts in a finance condition within your contract, because some people will rely on their finance condition for, instead of putting in sale of buyer's property, to try to convince the seller to accept the price that, you know, they've paid. Because again, most realtors will end up advising you, if you are a listing agent and you're presenting an offer and it has a condition subject to the sale of the buyer's property, I always say to the sellers, beware, because the buyer, which is where I was going previously, Michael, on this, may seem like they're all excited and they got full intentions of and plans to move to this new community, or in our case, move to Prince Edward Island, only to tie the house up for, you know, almost 3 months and then change their plans. So please know this stuff does happen. And now you just missed out on the prime selling season and you're back to the drawing board.
And this is a topic for the future, but I think a lot of buyers get overconfident because they go to a lender, may it be a bank or a mortgage broker, and they either get qualified or they get a formal approval from a lender, and they think that's as good as cash, when in fact it's not, because there's no 100% guarantee, because that lender's buying the property, and they may or may not even like it. In the case of PEI, it could be something in a community that they don't want to touch. Maybe they only want houses in, the mortgage broker mentioned, cities over 10,000 people. So unless you have a check to cut for that house, do not remove that finance clause. Moving along, unless you have any final comment on that?
Yeah, and I mean, it was, and it is for a future topic that we'll discuss further, Michael, but just because you have you're pre-qualified or you have a pre-approval, there are a lot of additional caveats to your approval that you may not have even considered, or the mortgage broker, because it's just, there's a lot of information that I know we as real estate professionals have and sometimes take for granted and dump on our clients. And the same with mortgage brokers. They try to walk you through. You don't assume that that means it's a blanket approval for any house anywhere on PEI.
And the other thing is, qualification and formal approval from a lender are two different things, is my understanding, in that a qualification means you talk to a real estate or a lender and they said, yeah, it looks pretty good. We can probably do a mortgage for you. You know, 2-second thing, maybe you filled out a form online. Whereas an approval is actually the lender looking at you saying, Patty is borrowing this money in this province and we approve her for this amount. Those two are different. The approval is better in some ways, but in other ways, you may end up getting a higher interest rate quoted, which you may or may not be able to negotiate down. But that would basically be the difference, correct?
Yeah. So and you're absolutely right. Just to get pre-qualified, you're just giving light numbers. An approval, you're actually getting into your ratios.
And they go through every little scrap piece of paper and income and notice of assessments, and the questions will go on and on and on.
Yes.
Just like this topic, moving along.
Okay. One of the things that, and it's a good thing, Michael, we don't come across this very often in our industry, and that we're not anyone across North America. We are not supposed to or allowed to do this based on our code of ethics that we have agreed to adhere to. But bad mouthing other real estate brokerages, it's not professional. It doesn't make you look professional by doing it. It doesn't make our industry look good. And it, again, like I said, it doesn't make you look good as a professional if you're stomping on your competition. We are held as realtors to a very high standard. And that is what sellers and buyers are expecting of our industry. And that is the professionalism and conduct that we've agreed to adhere to. And just so that if anyone says, cite your sources, within our Realtor Code of Ethics, it is Article 19, that a realtor shall not publicly discredit another registrant. So if you're a realtor listening to this, please be professional. It doesn't do you any good to badmouth. Not to say that I haven't sat in on meetings and I've listened to an upset client who didn't have a positive experience with one of my colleagues and in our industry here. And the position that I take is I just apologize on behalf of my industry. Let's see what we can do today to start making this better for you.
And of course, the one thing you never hear is the other agent's story either.
Yes.
You're only hearing half of it, but you're not hearing the whole story.
And it wouldn't even matter. You just, as a realtor, we don't add our input. We receive the information, kind of like a therapist. Therapists, they help guide and coach you to figure out the decisions and what you're supposed to be doing yourself. Realtors, we are not supposed to sit there, crack open a beer or a glass of wine or something and decide this is going to be a dump fest where we're going to just badmouth one another. It looks so bad on our industry. So please just, again, I just take the high road. I apologize. I don't know the other realtor's side. I will get to know this client as we go through the process, and maybe there was a reason that the relationship dissolved, and maybe sometimes, but it's a small, small percentage.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how important is the deposit after you have a signed contract?
I would say an 11.
11 would be the correct answer. Without that deposit, you really do not have any contract. And there has been times where I've wanted to write contracts for myself or others with zero deposit. And the lawyers will tell you, you need something to bind it, even if it's $20. I am religious about finding that deposit the second that contract is signed. I want to see it sent in, or I want to have it in my hand. I want a receipt from my office that it's in a trust account. It's very, very important that that deposit is received, because there has been situations where people have sold their houses, moving truck has left, they have an open house, they go to the lawyer, and the purchaser says, meh, changed your mind, we're not closing. You don't have our deposit because the agent never looked for it. So wash your hands and have a good day, and there's nothing they can do about it.
And they walk away.
They walk away into the sunset like an old Western movie.
Yes. Who's responsible, Michael, to make sure that the deposit has been received? You say that you're very diligent, assuming whether you're on the buying and the selling side, but just a little bit more information.
I'm not sure you could hold any particular party hostage, but I would probably say ultimately at the end of the day, the brokerage would be responsible for having those monies in the trust account within the allotted amount of time indicated on the contract, which is typically done in hours, which you usually see 48 or 72 hours there.
Yes, absolutely. And so what I'm going to say is I feel the responsibility lies on both brokerages. The buyer's agent should be following up with their buyer and getting a screenshot or some kind of confirmation and proof that that deposit has been sent. And then the buyer's agent should follow up with the listing agent to confirm, did your brokerage receive it? If you're working with a realtor, a buyer's agent that might not be very trained and just assumes all this stuff happens seamlessly and magically behind the scenes, and they don't have to worry about it because they don't have the systems and processes in place yet. As a listing agent, you need to be following up with your brokerage and with the buyer's agent as well to make sure, did you receive it? Why? Because we are representing clients, and we don't want to have the seller, like you said in your example, Michael, fast forward to closing day, there was never a binded contract. So therefore, the buyer can't be held to it. And if you're a buyer and you pass your time period because your agent wasn't on top of it, you got working, you were just all excited, you secured the contract, and you were to have that deposit in by hour 48 and hour 50, that seller receives a much more attractive offer. Guess what? That seller does have the legal right to accept that second offer that comes in. So you don't want to drop the ball. All four parties need to be on top of it.
One thing I do is when I send the file in, and I send my own files in, I don't third party it out because I want to see what's in the file. I want to know when it was sent in. I include a receipt from my brokerage that says we have the deposit and it's in our trust account. Do you do the same?
I don't send out necessarily. I do, but not like a formal receipt. I actually send off the receipt from the bank that I deal with, and I send it off to my listing.
Well, that's fine.
Brokerage
agent. That's probably better than something someone's manufactured.
Yes,
Patty, this is more something in a more alignment in your age range. Tell us about the program for seniors on the island.
Yeah, there's some great seniors
so
programs.
You're admitting that
I'm
this
not
is in your...
a senior. I think, Michael, you're a little older than I am, but we're not going to get into that. So there really are, if you find yourself, you're living on Prince Edward Island, you moved here during COVID, or you just happen to, this is your retirement place and you're in your senior years and you're feeling a little isolated and lonely, please know that the province has such amazing programs in place. You can have a scheduled volunteer to come to your home once a week for an hour or however much time you both agree to. to just sit with you, help you do errands, you know, play some games, help you if you got some home projects and you're just looking for someone to bounce some ideas off. They'll even have programs where someone will call you once a week to check in on you and make sure that you're okay. There's lots of other groups and clubs that you can join. There's walking clubs. In the winter months here, there are walking tracks. Summerside's Credit Union Place has one. There's ones in Stratford. I know lots of seniors that even walk the mall and stuff. So there's lots of groups and organizations. Another, speaking of a different age range, is with regards to affordable secondary school programs here on Prince Edward Island. The University of Prince Edward Island is probably the most affordable university for secondary education anywhere in Canada. They offer so many bursaries and grants and programs, and they love watching their island children grow, develop into these productive members. Hopefully they stay on Prince Edward Island because our youth, that generation, has so much value, so much to offer. And actually Gen Zs are just such a cool group of individuals. I happen to have an 18-year-old son who's currently enrolled at UPEI. And I just can't say enough about the school and how good they are to work with. And there's also Holland College, which has some great programs here. Summerside, as well as Charlottetown, are some of the locations. No shortage. If you're a family looking to move to Prince Edward Island, which is what was said to me many years ago when I moved to PEI 16 plus years ago, that don't move to PEI. People only go there to retire. And when they're in their latter years of their life, you're compromising your children's future and their education. I am telling you, that is so far from the truth. Our children here are so well looked after and protected, and there's great programs from little ones all the way to university secondary school programs. It's a great province.
It is. Moving along to garages and the ever-shrinking versions thereof, have you noticed how garages seem to be getting smaller and smaller and smaller?
Yeah, just to say they have one.
And there's lawsuits happening all across North America where builders are indicated that there'd be a double car garage bolted onto your house only to find out that the only car you're ever going to get in there is either a toy one or a smart car. Because in addition to the fact that the garage is too small for any normal vehicle, they've also been putting water heaters, central vac units, air recirculation pumps, you name it, at the back of the garage. So now it might be wide enough barely, but now you can't back into it. So if you are going to buy a house that you think you can put your vehicles into, you may want to measure it.
Yeah. So buyer beware, because a lot of homes, especially like the retirees looking to downsize, they end up getting a house on a slab. They're trying to save space. They don't want to deal with basements. Just know, as much as either the items are sitting loose in your garage, like off to the corner or side, or they're just designating and creating a room, your utility room is off of the garage, that you are losing at least one of the garage bays, and you only have parking for one vehicle. So if you're a buyer and you're looking to purchase something sight unseen on PEI, I would be asking your realtor during, hopefully you're doing a video showing, at the very least, can you measure the amount of space available for me to park my vehicle? Might be good to know what the length of your vehicle and width is so that you can make the determination if you actually do indeed end up having a double car garage or if it's just a 1.5 with a lot of space around it.
Because of course, the other thing they'll do, whether the garage is bolted onto the house or part of it or detached, is they'll measure the outside of the garage. But they're not accounting for the workbench that's there, the furnace, the heat pump, whatever there might be inside that would preclude you from putting a vehicle inside.
Yeah, and just on that, because I just had this 2 days ago, Michael, the garage is not, because it doesn't have technically living space in it, and the utility room is not living space.
What if there's a cot there?
A garage should not, as per the way we do our measurements on Prince Edward Island, be included in the total square footage of a home.
Can't just toss a sleeping blanket in there?
No, it's not to be included in the total calculation of the living space.
Have you ever received these texts from other agents that have 25 questions, which may or may not be very legitimate, or they could probably answer the vast majority of them by themselves? I would say your answer is yes.
I have completely received unfiltered, unscreened lists of
questions.
You just
stole my word.
What is it?
Filter.
Oh.
The texts going to the listing agent. Some of the questions you get are just mind-blowing, and it's just stuff that agents should say, well, you know, that's something maybe we can, you know, investigate further, or we'll see when you view the house in person. But some of the questions are, is there a garage door opener?
Okay, that seems silly.
Is there a battery on the sump pump? What is the water pressure at the wellhead? Is the oil tank insurable? Now, there's an open question, insurable by whom? So they send you all these questions, and then what I had, which I thought I was in grade four, well, if you don't answer these questions, we're just going to look at other houses. Isn't that just in the best interest of servicing the purchaser?
Well, that's unfortunate that that was
the response.
That they
picked that agent.
And unfortunate, I don't know. So as a buyer, you should be aware of your agent and their communication skills. Look at how they're communicating with you. And as a buyer's agent, you should be filtering these questions. What I was saying is unfiltered, they will copy and paste everything that the buyer ended up sending them, forward it off to the listing agent because they couldn't be bothered.
It's easy.
I realize, but they'll also, because they, whether they had a job during the day or they were busy all day, they send it to you at night. They expect a response fairly quickly so that you look like, well, I sent off these questions, or, you know, today, and I'm just getting my responses back now, whereas I just received it. Also, to assume that I have time to sit there and go through, I've had them like 26, 30 questions, Michael, and a lot of them should have been answered by their representing agent. Maybe two or three I could ask my seller. But I'm not going to bother my seller, which is why they've hired me. I'll do my due diligence as a listing agent, and a buyer's agent needs to do theirs, and also not sit there and have a little bit of a cheeky attitude, because that's not, like you said, that's not servicing the client. It's up to the buyer's agent to do their due diligence. Like, Michael, I've had a question where an agent sent me a text and said, what is the property taxes on that? Whereas I'm confident my property tax amount was on the listing, all they had to do was go to the MLS system.
Or go to Geolink.
Or go to Geolink.
Which they all have subscriptions for, which will give them that.
Yes, and as a buyer, just so you're aware, every realtor on Prince Edward Island has access to Geolink, where we can get ortho maps, if there's covenants, the deed, we...
Surveys,
the registry report,
which sales will, numbers.
Yeah, let us know what the property in most cases transacted at
Leans.
The last... Absolutely.
Patty, it's the fall.
Okay.
We got one last kick at the can before all we hear every single day is I'm not doing anything until after Christmas. Where the reality sits in after Christmas, and now it becomes indicative of the weather. But that's a subject for January. So what can we do to polish our listing that's still for sale before the Christmas season, which usually starts mid-November in PEI when all the hubbub and the talk starts about focusing on Christmas?
Well, like your listing that you were mentioning, Michael,
that
previously.
That beautiful home?
Yes.
It's so nice.
It would be advantageous for you to get a beautiful fall backdrop picture of it so that the photos are representative of the season, so that because a buyer wakes up every day and whether it's forced on them because of a job relocation or a family situation, they have to move. They have to buy a property. They have to relocate. And as long as they're not sitting there going, oh, how many days on market? They're not doing that until they're really serious about the property, because the only reason they ask that question at that point in time is because they're looking to negotiate and see how far they can get the price down. But when they start looking, your photos are your first showing, in my opinion, on your property. And if they go through those photos and they like what they see, then they read the specs and make sure it is in alignment with, yes, it's got the three bedrooms that I want. Oh, yes, they're all above, you know, ground. I don't have two up and one down or whatever the situation is. Then they typically reach out to an agent with either their crazy long list of questions or to book a showing so that they can get into the property and see if it's for them. So it's a perfect time. And if you're a seller thinking of selling come January, you just want to get some things done, you're finishing up, you were out of the country or whatever the situation is there, you might want to get a contract in place or start working with a realtor now to get your photos so that your listing, you will have one, you know, winter photo because it should be reflective of the season, but you'll have these popping color photos to really accentuate how beautiful your property is.
So get your photos redone. Consider price reductions if your price is not in alignment with your motivation and or the market. The other thing I like to do is mix up the main photos. Or sometimes I've just deleted all the photos except for one photo and it sold the property. Especially houses that you don't really want to take a look at.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the stuff you have listed.
That's pretty funny, Michael.
And I know one of the things that you like to do that sells properties instantly is to put a giant 25-foot by 30-foot sign in their front lawn with your head on half of it.
I don't have my head on the signs. That's pretty funny. I used to in the past, but I no longer have my head on my signs. I will say, though, with regards to this, so last year alone, I had two RCMP relocations that happened. And guess what month they were going house shopping with me?
January.
November.
December. November. I meant to say November.
Which you didn't. So November, they did their house hunting trip so that they could close, you know, in January, preferably before it really you're in the dead of winter here. One was closing the third week of January. The other one ended up having to close middle of February. Both those buyers did their house hunting trip in November. So if you're a seller and you're thinking, well, you know, my listing's stale or I'm going to take it off because I need a break because this has been too stressful or no one buys during the winter months, we'll just bring it on in the spring. Just know you're doing yourself a disservice.
Well, we're focusing on Christmas and we don't want to have showings during Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to get fewer showings during the winter months. Yes, that is true. Because you're only getting serious buyers typically during the winter months versus the summer, you're getting those tourists that want to know, hey, I wonder how far my dollar would go on PEI if we ever decided to move here. So it feels great. You're getting lots of activity, but a lot of times you're getting tire kickers. You don't tend to get tire kickers during the winter season.
A person decides to buy a house. They love it. It's so cheap compared to what they've seen in Toronto, Montreal, Edmonton, where else? Victoria. So they buy it for $850,000. They're laughing all the way to picking up their key until such time they find out that those homeowners that sold it to them paid $345,000 just 2 years before. And chances are their house is not worth $850,000 in this market. Now, they were dealing with the listing agent, so the listing agent did not have a legal obligation to provide buyer agent services. In other words, they weren't representing the buyer, they really weren't representing the seller, they're sort of just there as a
facilitator,
a message delivery system. So the purchaser's agent, which was also representing the home sellers, which was going to double their commission on this particular deal because they're handling both ends, neglected to mention that the current owners paid $345,000, they're asking $850,000, and the purchasers never asked for a history of house sales to see what the current owners paid for the house. The moral of the story is, if you're looking at a house, let's just say it's $850,000, it takes 2 seconds to get a history of the MLS, a printout of the registry, and if there's nothing in either one of those, you can even call the tax department, give them the PID number, and they should have or may have the previous sale price and when it happened as well. But it's not realistic to think that a house that someone paid $345 for is worth $850 2 years later, typically under normal circumstances.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I was going to end up saying is if you have a custom collaboration site because you have your own buyer's representative working on your behalf, the custom collaboration site will give you the full history of that property. You'll be able to look through previous listing pictures on there. So high value to have your own buyer's agent representative to protect you and to make sure that, do you need a reverse CMA? Am I purchasing the property at fair market value? And if you are okay paying a little more because you plan to stay there for 10 years and the market will eventually reach your purchase price.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. As long as you're making an informed purchase and that you're not blindly going in, and then 2 years from now, you end up in a situation, unfortunately, where you might be getting a separation or a divorce, or you have no choice, your work is moving you across the country and they'll only reimburse you a certain percentage of your loss, and now you're the one left holding the cards and taking the hit. So you need to be mindful. You need to have your own buyer's agent to represent, because like you say, Michael, the listing agent, who are they representing
at the beginning? Seller.
At the beginning of this whole encounter and interaction, they already had a signed contract agreement with the seller that they've agreed to represent. So their fiduciary obligation or responsibility was to the seller. You show up on scene as a buyer and think that this listing agent is just going to sing like a canary and protect you, whereas that's not the way the situation works.
Plus, there's a monetary bias because they're going to double their commission, which is why double ending is illegal in certain states and provinces. And I agree with that 100%. And a lot of times, if there's any conflict at all, I will not represent the buyer. Patty, yes. We're going to give a homeowner's tip, and then we're going to allow you to give us some final notes. So the homeowner's tip for this week is your oven handle is not a towel rack.
That's your tip.
Well, I'll even give you a second free tip.
Okay.
Your fridge is not a storage place for fridge magnets.
But some people like their fridge magnets.
Which is why they should invent fridges that are made out of aluminum.
Oh, that's pretty funny. But a lot of moms and dads, they have their mom calendar on there or their dad calendar
it's
to let
tacky.
Them know. Well, if you're living there and it's your house, then fine. If you are not going to be staying and you've decided to move, that a home tip, I would say then yes, pack all your magnets up and don't store. Usually towels are kind of tacky colors anyways, so you don't need them. They don't accent or dress up or stage the stove. They just need to go. So that's good. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Michael and Patty Show, otherwise known as MAPS, PEI's podcast that helps guide and navigate you through the buying and selling of PEI real estate, and just a little bit of fun facts about Prince Edward Island as well. We appreciate each and every one of you for downloading and listening to our episodes, and those who are joining the Facebook group, which there also is a LinkedIn. I haven't yet gone in and really started creating a lot of content for that, so that's on my list of things to do. But please check them both out.
And if you have any questions or comments about PEI Real Estate, Prince Edward Island in general, post them in the Facebook, LinkedIn group, message us directly. Be sure to subscribe, follow, give us some feedback, a 5-star rating, and have a great day.
Have a great day.